Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
So today we're going to read, we'll continue reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaja's meeting with the Kumars. And today we will read text 6. Patakasana asinam swadishnyesh viva pavakam shradha samyama samyukta prita praha bhavagrajan. Translation. The four great sages were elder to Lord Shiva, and when they were seated on the golden throne, they appeared just like fire blazing on an altar. Maharaj Prithu, out of his great gentleness and respect for them, began to speak with great restraint as follows. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Kumars are described herein as the elder brothers of Lord Shiva. When the Kumars were born out of the body of Lord Brahma, they were requested to get married and increase the population. In the beginning of the creation, there was a great need of population. Therefore, Lord Brahma was creating one son after another and ordering them to increase. However, when the Kumars were requested to do so, they declined. They wanted to remain brahmachari throughout life and be engaged fully in the devotional service of the Lord. The Kumars are called naishtika brahmachari, meaning they are never to marry. Because of their refusal to marry, Lord Brahma became so angry that his eyes became reddish. From between his eyes, Lord Shiva or Rudra appeared. The mode of anger is consequently known as Rudra. Lord Shiva also has a Sampradaya party, known as the Rudra Sampradaya, and they're also known as Vaishnavas. Let me read the verse again. Hatakasana asinam swadishnyesh viva pavakan shradha samyamya samyukta prita praha bhavagrajan. The four great sages were elder to Lord Shiva, and when they were seated on the golden throne, they appeared just like fire blazing on an altar. Maharaj Prithu, out of his great gentleness and respect for them, began to speak with great restraint as follows. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srinati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Neravishesha Shunyavadi Vaskrijadeshtarne Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajikapaturibhyas Chakribhyas Sindhubhyevacha. Vajitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. So as we go through the Bhagavatam, this particular part of it, and factually any part, actually. Then verse by verse, as we proceed, we find that more and more revelation comes, and more insight, and more spiritual empowerment comes, actually, to really infuse our hearts with some transcendental energy, inspiration. Yes. So it's really very wonderful, actually. And this verse is no exception. There's an extremely important point here, which is about the four Kumars and who they are and what they are. They are, well, they are very ancient, actually. They're from right at the very beginning of the creation, among the very, very first sons of Brahma. And therefore they're old. They're very old. But by some transcendental arrangement, even though they're really old, they're older than Lord Shiva, who at this point is a fully developed adult and great powerful controller of the universe. So the four Kumars, they're older than him, just very slightly, but still they are actually older than him. But they're in the forms of four young boys, little boys. In fact, so little that for boys of that age to be walking around with no clothes on is not some sort of unusual thing at all. It's just quite how things work. Whereas, obviously, when someone gets even a little older as a child, then they have to be clothed. So, due to the transcendental arrangement of the Lord, the four Kumars, despite being at this stage quite old, they have these childish forms. But then, as the verse describes here, it's very wonderful. As they were seated on the golden throne, which they were offered to sit on by Maharaj Paritu, they appeared just like fire blazing on an altar, on a golden altar. So, you know, if you have some very beautiful altar, very skillfully made, very beautifully made, and it's covered in gold, actual gold, and then you have some fire, some lamps burning on that altar, then that golden altar is going to really be so effulgent and, like, very powerfully effulgent. So the four Kumars, they were sitting there on the throne, golden throne, and because of their potency, they were lighting up everything, and that golden throne, which is already very impressive anyway, but now with their presence, their effulgences, they looked like fire on a golden throne, just illuminating the throne, and yes, just very, very striking and very rich and powerful. So that was very nice. Now, how is it so? How could it be so that these four little boys, they're devotees, all right, but they're lighting everything up with this effulgence? It's really quite extraordinary. Where does their power come from? And Srila Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that the Kumaras are called Naishtika Brahmachari, meaning they're never to marry. So, when a person makes, seriously, truly makes that commitment, that lifelong, I will remain celibate, I will remain brahmachari. Brahmachari literally means Brahma. The roots are Brahma, Acha. That your Acha, your activity, is simply of Brahma, of spirituality, that's all. Fully absorbed, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in simply and purely spiritual activity. So when a devotee, when a person becomes situated in such a vow, in a real sense, not just for the sake of some show, but actually internally, they're not really that detached from the opposite sex and so on. But when the person is actually Naishtika Brahmachari, so completely fixed in spirituality, then their whole spiritually, of course, it's extremely beneficial. And even materially, physically, psychologically, if a person actually embraces that way of life of absolute spirituality and dedication at the lotus feet of the Lord, then the person becomes empowered. And the person becomes effulgent. Prabhupada was effulgent. It was quite amazing. Of course, he had been a householder before, and had children before, a number of children, but always he was dedicated to Krishna consciousness. But then later on, he took sannyas and completely put those things totally behind him, altogether. And being so much absorbed in Krishna consciousness, absolutely, then he became empowered. And that empowerment showed in so many ways, actually. In every way in his life. Whatever he said was empowered. Whatever he did was empowered. If you just looked at him, you could see he was empowered. It was very amazing. So, the Prabhupada tells the whole story here, how Lord Brahma was producing offspring specifically with the idea that you all, you offspring, you must produce offspring. And the four Kumaras refused because they, as advanced, they were already advanced personalities, and they understood that the goal of life is not just to produce offspring, but the goal of life is actually to become a pure devotee of the Lord and perfect one's life and go back to Godhead. That's the goal of life. And anything else is at best secondary, and at worst, just a distraction from this important business, God realization. So Lord Brahma became angry, and then Lord Shiva was born of his anger, not just of his anger, but as the embodiment of the anger of Lord Brahma. And Lord Shiva, at that time, he was just completely possessed by anger, being the manifest form of the anger of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, you know, he's very powerful. So when he gets angry, sure, that's really serious anger. So Lord Shiva was the embodiment of all the anger of Lord Brahma. He was going to destroy the universe. But Lord Brahma pacified him. It's a long story, but basically he pacified him and told him, don't worry, you can come out at the time of the destruction of the universe. Then you can get as angry as you like. And then you must. And you must destroy everything. So that's coming. So anyway. So, but now the four Kumars, because of their spiritual advancement, they didn't want to get involved in household life. Because household life, many of you are householders, and if you were asked, and if you gave just a very frank answer, I'm sure you would admit that household life is sometimes complicated. Sometimes it's difficult. And the idea that youngsters have that, oh, I will meet my Prince Charming. And he thinks, I will meet my angel princess from Goloka. This turns out, even amongst devotees who are serious devotees and are deeply committed to trying to do their duties as well as they can in Krishna consciousness, sure, Hare Krishna is all I can say. But anyway, you all know better than me that it's a challenge. Sometimes it's a challenge. It's a noble challenge if undertaken in the right spirit. But noble or not, it's still a challenge. Yes. And, you know, along with having to deal at very close quarters with another person every day for years, in which case you learn all their idiosyncrasies and they learn all of yours. Sure. Yeah. So along with just that, along with that, there's all their responsibilities, financial responsibilities, which you cannot just sort of love away. You actually have to deal with them. And children who are sometimes prone to be slightly problematic, you got to train them. And sometimes they have other ideas. Really have other ideas. So the four Kumars were thinking like this because it's true. It's not an attempt to just paint a sort of a negative picture, but it's a reality. And if a devotee can do without that and remain happy and happily engaged in devotional service and not have the mind bothering too much that, oh, you know, maybe I should marry because, you know, I have desires of that sort and, oh, what to do. But if the devotee can remain happy by being fully engaged in devotional service and preaching and helping the Krishna consciousness movement, then, well, that's good. That's very good. And they can do that, and actually they should do that. So this is how the four Kumars were thinking. Exactly how they were thinking. And so they refused. their father, Lord Brahma, who got angry, and then Lord Shiva came as the manifestation of that anger. So anyway, if devotees can remain in celibate positions happily without the mind troubling them too much, then they should do that, and they should be encouraged to do that, and inspired and helped, because it's very wonderful. It's very wonderful for them, because they can make very nice progress. It's very wonderful for the Krishna consciousness movement, because it means they have the time now. They can engage full time in devotional service of different types. Yes, so it's very positive. Anyway, for those who cannot do it comfortably and happily, and who are really pushed by material desire, well, then there's Grihastha Ashram and Krishna consciousness, which, if done nicely, is glorious, actually. If done nicely. If done nicely, well, that is, as we've mentioned, that is definitely a challenge. But if done nicely, it's glorious. And the family can set a very important example for the people in general, who are practically always householders. The family, devotee family, can set a wonderful example for them of how it is possible to be materially successful, while at the same time being truly spiritually successful, and as a result of that, happy, very happy, and observably happy. You know, some people, you see them and they look unhappy, and if you ask them, are you okay? Then sometimes they say, I'm fine. But with devotees a little more advanced, they are observably happy. You don't have to see, is this person happy, or what's going on with this person? But you can just see, look, we have a happy devotee here, how nice. Smiling and some vitality in Krishna consciousness. So, yes, so it can be done in household life. But in order for it to be done in household life, then the same principle of brahmacharya, in the sense of abstinence from engagement in sexual activity, in order for the Grihastha Ashram to be successful, then that has to be there. Not that when devotees become householders, then they can just engage freely in sexual activity and it's okay because now we're married, so what's the problem? Not really. It is a problem, actually. If one wants to progress in Krishna consciousness, it's a problem. If one wants to be spiritually happy, it's a problem. Great problem. Prabhupada made the point about Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, who, you know, is really not a person who we really admire much from the actual spiritual point of view, the Krishna conscious point of view. He was, you know, in his own way attached to Bhagavad Gita, in his own way attached to Lord Ram, and so on. But he encouraged tremendous amount of confusion, even in the name of Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada expressed considerable dissatisfaction for that. And even actually, not long ago, I read some excerpts on some book he wrote, like his reflections, his thoughts on Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. And my Lord, talk about someone who didn't understand Bhagavad Gita. It's dangerously misguided. So, but anyway, Prabhupada did make the point that the one main positive point he made about Mahatma Gandhi is that Mahatma Gandhi, at a certain point, when he really seriously began his political mission, he adopted celibacy. Even though he was married, he adopted celibacy. And from what Prabhupada says, from what we understand, he adhered to that. He stuck at that. And as a result of that, Prabhupada makes the point, he developed the power to at least be a major influence in kicking the British out of India. That takes power. Yeah, that takes some real power. So he developed internal strength, determination, power internally through his commitment to celibacy. Prabhupada discusses this on a few occasions. So even for householders who have a duty that they must produce children. They don't produce children unless there's some special circumstances, but it's like a type of negligence on their part if they don't produce proper children and then train the children to become proper humans and proper devotees. Yeah. So, even though that is there, but still, it must be done according to religious principles and not just freely like the animals. Yes. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, there are rules. There are rules in regard to the grihastha, Krishna conscious householder couple producing children in a way which is spiritual and in a way which guarantees, or if not guarantees, at least creates the most auspicious environment and atmosphere so that the children who do come will actually be nice children and devotees at heart and from their previous lifetimes, and who then can be more easily trained and molded into devotees as they grow up. So this principle then of brahmachari, meaning in general to dedicate one's life to spiritual activity, and specifically, in a specific, more specific sense, meaning maintaining a standard of celibacy, is important even for the householders who must produce children, or at least who should produce children. And therefore, the householders are sometimes called, in Krishna consciousness, the good householders, grihastha brahmacharis. Grihastha brahmacharis. Yeah. Yes, it's very nice. It's very nice. And they can do wonderful service, and many of them do. Yes, so, you know, if one is already a householder, well, all right. So that is already there. But then now, do your household grihastha ashram in a really nice Krishna conscious way. And for those who are not already householders, well, just see. Look at yourself and see what is the most suitable situation for you and what can you manage comfortably and happily in Krishna consciousness. And then take it from there enthusiastically. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comment or question from, yes, Mother Satchavana?
Can you say that if
someone
needs a
sympathy?
And can be very happy in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, indeed.
And that would be very good.
Yes.
So does this apply for Matajis also?
Of course. Any living entity. Have to be a living entity. If you're not a living entity, other considerations apply. But it applies to everyone. And, you know, interesting thing, of course, nowadays you get this whole phenomenon of same-sex marriages. Mm. You may have heard about that a bit, you know. In the so-called advanced world, like America particularly. But otherwise, you may have noticed, that generally, at least sort of traditionally, you could say, as many men marry as the number of women. Did you notice that? It's not that more women marry. I mean, traditionally means in the last couple of hundred years. If you go back into like real Vedic times, then some men particularly would accept more than one wife. But in the last, you know, couple of hundred years, it's not been common at all. And nowadays, other than this, the recent phenomenon, you see that if 100 women get married, then 100 men get married too. Yeah. Interesting phenomenon. So, and within ISKCON, there are ladies who are not married. I mean, mature women, not just young girls, but mature women who are not married and they're happy in Krishna consciousness. And no one is telling them, you know, quietly on the side, you know, it might be better if you're not married, or even openly. But let them carry on in Krishna consciousness. I mean, I know a few ladies, you know, it means my age or even a little older, who have not. The two I know the best are Mother Mullaty, who hasn't been married for years. She was married, hasn't been married for years. And Mother Lakshmi Moni, who was also married but hasn't been married for many years. I don't know how many, plenty. And they're really good devotees. Wow. They're very, very serious. And they're very extremely successful in Krishna consciousness. So it applies to everyone. And when we see that a man or a woman is actually really serious about maintaining celibacy in Krishna consciousness, then we should encourage that. And we do.
Mm-hmm. I got another question. sometimes some young girls from my country, they don't want to get married, but there is the insecurity, like the financial insecurity in the future, what they will do. Like, for their own future, they decide to get married. So what's your opinion?
Yeah, you know, one shouldn't just marry for financial reasons. Then it's a sort of a form of prostitution. You know, it's just for money. I mean, I know a few ladies who are, you know, sort of reasonably mature women, 40, 50, that sort of age. And their husbands are more or less demons. You know, they're really just, you know, it's not a matter of them not being devotees. They're completely like drunkards, meat eaters, and just crazy people. But the wife feels she has to stick with it. The wife, who's a very serious devotee, feels she has to stick with him. Even though, you know, it's physically dangerous sometimes, and at best it's extremely unpleasant, but just for financial reasons. So, you know, if people get married, it should be because they can see, after some experience with themselves, they can see that actually, you know, I have that sort of nature. For me to remain celibate, I will not be comfortable. It'll be too difficult for me. I need the association of the opposite sex, and I want to do that in a Krishna conscious way, in the correct way. So therefore, you know, on that, those sorts of grounds, people can accept a grihastha ashram. You know, it's kind of like an insult to the husband if you say, listen, you know, I don't really need you. I've got no real interest in you. It's just your money. That's all. Just keep bringing the money in, and I'll be okay with you. If the money starts coming in, forget it. Isn't it? It's terrible. So, yeah. And if we're going to be serious about Krishna consciousness, then we should at least have some basic faith that Krishna will look after us. Yeah. If we're going to make the effort for Krishna, Krishna will look after us.
So, sometimes devotees who join the temple, like the Mataji especially, like many devotees tell them the management is not stable. Like,
yeah, sure.
In the future there's a problem with the management, and also they should get married.
Yeah, many devotees, you know. We live in a society, it's a whole society, and we can't control everyone, you know, like sort of like thought police. But it's not good to try to influence other devotees, particularly in ways like that. It's not good. It should be discouraged. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Srila Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Maharaj ki.
Jai.